A major driver of the U.S. economy, real estate, a major driver of real estate, 30-year mortgages, which are now at their highest in 2 years. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. With fresh data on new home construction due later this morning, we can tell you that the average 30-year fixed mortgage rate is up at 4.16%. That's the highest in more than 2 years, September of 2014. The cost of borrowing for a house is expected to keep going up, with the Fed promising more interest rate hikes. That should make home buying more expensive when we get into the springtime real estate season. But by many measures, the U.S. economy is strengthening overall, which should be good for the housing market, Marketplace's Mark Garrison reports.
When that mortgage number tops 4%, it raises some eyebrows. Selma Hepp is chief economist at real estate firm Pacific Union.
We continue to see mortgage rates creeping up. So there is concern about how that's going to impact affordability.
But relatively small increases like we're seeing lately don't tend to push away folks who are truly committed to buying. Wharton School real estate professor Susan Wachter says there may even be a different impact.
The actual prospect of continuing increases may push folks across that decision line to buy now while mortgage rates still are historically low.
She's also optimistic about ongoing strength in the economy, creating a wave of new buyers.
We have millennials who are getting jobs, getting wage increases, able to save for that down payment, and looking to have their first home.
The housing market tends to hibernate for much of winter, but if the economy can keep strong, a little movement in mortgage rates probably won't hold back a spring bloom. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
If you're thinking now's the time to invest in Russia, you are not alone in that thought. The index on the Russian stock exchange, the MICEX, is up 14.6% since the U.S. election. Two themes here, apparently thawing relations between the U.S. and Russia, plus oil-producing countries have pledged to drive up prices by cutting production, and Russia's economy is big into oil. Following this for us from London is BBC business reporter Russell Padmore.
It seems that investors are being a bit cute about this, and they're putting their money not necessarily into individual stocks, but into so-called exchange-traded funds or ETFs or other so-called passive funds, which are investing in Russian equities or Russian shares. I'll give you an example. JP Morgan's Russian equity fund is up 9% on its recent numbers.
Russian stocks are also benefiting from the great shift out of bonds on the bet that interest rates will rise more quickly in the U.S. in a Trump era, either due to higher inflation and or higher economic growth.
We are seeing actually, David, a rotation out of investments by these big funds in the bond market into equities or shares. A lot of shares look much more attractive in emerging markets because they're a 30% discount compared to the S&P 500. Both Brazil and in particular Russia looking very much a favorite place for these investors, largely, as you've said, driven by the fact that the oil prices jumped. Remember, Russia is taking part in this move by OPEC to cap production, which has already driven up the price of oil. And indeed, the fact that Donald Trump seems to be on a path where there will be a thawing of relations with Moscow, and in particular, the Russian President Vladimir Putin. That looks as though Russia might be in favor again with investors.
Now, if politics is really about apportioning resources, that is to say, who gets the money, there's a lot of change coming this next year. Help us explain, explore, and elucidate these stories as only my crew here at Marketplace can. I'm here to ask you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift, in any amount, counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Help us keep it coming to you. It would be especially helpful to us if you donate at marketplace.org by December 31st. Back when the Walt Disney Company paid $4 billion for Lucasfilm, it bought the rights to make Star Wars movies. Let us just say that Disney is quite intent on getting its money's worth. The Star Wars movie Rogue One opens in theaters today. Some critics may not love it, but that doesn't matter, apparently. Sabri Benishore reports on Disney's big plan.
After Episode 7 last year and Rogue One this year, we'll get Episode 8, then a young Han Solo movie, then Episode 9, and maybe even a Boba Fett the Bounty Hunter movie. And that's all likely by 2020.
What Disney is doing is basically trying to milk the franchise as much as they can.
Avraham Ravid is professor of finance at the Sy Sim School of Business at Yeshiva University, and he says this is exactly what research shows they should be doing.
Sequels are the holy grail of movie making, less risky than the average film, and the return is higher.
Now, in Disney's case, these standalone movies serve two purposes. One is to make money, obviously, but not just from the box office.
My estimate is for every dollar they get at the movie theaters, they make about $5 to $6 in other stuff.
Aswath Damodaran is professor of finance at NYU's Stern School. Sure, there are the toys, the video games, clothing, but for Disney, there's also theme parks. Star Wars attractions are coming to Disneyland and Disney World. Standalone Star Wars movies are also a generational bridge.
The very first Star Wars came out so long ago, and you got to bring those old fans back, then you got to attract new ones.
So keep some old characters, bring some new ones in for new generations to identify with. Now, can that go horribly, horrifically wrong? Yes.
Missy called Jar Jar Binks. Missy, your humble servant.
That was the worst character in any movie ever in any galaxy, Jar Jar Binks, back in Episode 1. Disney hasn't made that mistake so far. And is it possible to sequel a franchise to death? Absolutely. But judging by current interest, Star Wars isn't anywhere near that yet.
They know that saturating the market with the content is not the best way to create long-term value.
Daniel Ernst is with Welch Capital Partners.
Disney, across its history, has shown a strong commitment to developing franchises that people all over the world just love.
In other words, the force is with Disney on this one. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
And did you know the U.S. government would love you to buy live instead of fake Christmas trees? Listen to who they got to promote that view.
My name's Frazier. I'm the tree.
Yes, that's the actor Neil Patrick Harris, part of a marketing campaign to promote, what do we call it? The Evergreen Market. If you missed that story on the air, it'll be in our midday podcast and at marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.